what you believe and your perceptions will change the biology that you're expressing. And this is actually a new understanding, and it's not that new. In fact, science has actually been publishing information about how this mechanism occurs since 1990. And it's a new understanding in the sense that it's not in the textbooks. It's been in the leading-edge research for at least the last 15 years, and it's a concept called epigenetic control. And what does that mean? Well, genetic control is what we were talking about before. Genes control life.
But doesn't this leave a doctor who buys into what you're saying right now in a terrible position? Because if he tells a patient he's got an inoperable fatal tumor, then he has just dispensed the piece of information that's going to kill that person.
At exactly the same time, it's not a helpful situation, and it's been an issue because when you talk to doctors, their programming is not to give false hope. And so the significance about this is it's an important program because if you don't give false hope, meaning it's hope that you don't have anything you can, you know, there's no evidence for. So
yes.
I'm going to tell you something can happen here, but I don't have any evidence. They call that false hope. So the significance is you take away from their arsenal of healing abilities, you take away the ability of suggestion that they could influence a person because the idea was they don't want to be held liable for anything. And as a result, it's like, okay, this is what you have. And it's an issue of, it's an unfortunate issue of legal issues and medical issues intermixing right there. It's very difficult because a doctor is really obliged not to offer something that he can't scientifically attest to.
But if, in fact, the human mind is capable of reversing the otherwise scientifically thought to be irreversible, then there's an obligation on the part of the healer, who's taken an oath, to do the very best he can to include this.
Right.
This is going to be very hard, though, to get into traditional scientific literature. It's just in medical literature.
It's actually, they're trying to wean it out of the literature right now. The drug companies are trying to remove studies of placebos.
Yeah.
And the reason is because it contaminates their studies. Many of their drugs are no better than placebos. Prozac is scientifically not really of any value above a sugar pill. And that is a scientific fact that the federal government, this psychologist, Erwin Kirsch at the University of Connecticut, he had to actually sue the government's Freedom of Information Act to get the test results on these drugs. And it's found out that he's reported a number of papers on it, that the fact is that that Prozac and Zoloft, those kind of drugs, are no better than a placebo. And it's very hard because you can get those people who take this drug that will swear on their lives
that
this is what did it.
Oh, yes.
And yet, of course, and it's like, I'm happy that happens. There are a lot of people that could have sworn before that Laetril cured their cancer, and it did, but it wasn't really through the Laetril. It was that they took it with the belief that this was the most fantastic cancer cure ever, and they started to do this. So the issue is, I mean, how can you do this? And what we're talking about seems like magic. It's like, if I change my belief or perception of what I see, I change my biology, and the answer is through the new understanding called epigenetic control. And the word epi is key here because that prefix epi means above. So the word, and this is the new area of study.
Above genetic control.
That's exactly what it says. And what it represents is this. We used to think that genes were these autonomous units. You walk down the street, and all of a sudden a gene will say, well, it's time for cancer or something. A gene gave you cancer, and all this credit and power to genes. And here's a simple truth. A gene is a blueprint. It is exactly that. What it means is this. The body is made out of proteins. These are very complex molecules. That the complexity needs a blueprint to make them. The gene is a linear string, which is a blueprint, to make these proteins. And why that's important is this. Go to an architect's office, and he's working on a blueprint on his desk. Stand behind him and ask him, is that blueprint on or off? And he'll look at you, what do you mean it's on or off? Well, you talk about a gene being on or off, and the reality is, boy, have we made a big mistake. The fact is, as the contractor would tell you, the blueprint's not on or off. It's whether I read the blueprint or I don't read the blueprint that makes all the difference. And that's what medicine is now beginning to realize, is that the genes don't turn on and off. It's whether the cell reads the genes or the cell doesn't read the gene. And all of a sudden, then you have to back up and say, yeah, but then who's in charge of what the cell reads?
Right. And the answer to that?
The skin or membrane of the cell, which is in sense, in human embryology, our brain and our nervous system is derived from the skin as well. And this, and the skin, you say, well, the skin is the brain. And the answer is, of course, if you think about it, it's the interface between the organism and the environment. So one side of the skin is reading the outside world. The other side of the skin is reading the inside world. And by processing that information, the skin can adjust the biology to meet the needs of the environment.
I thought the skin, for example, was simply providing a signal to the brain, kind of like an input of information.
Yeah, in embryology, those that have out there some may have heard the words. In embryology, you start with a single egg, you fertilize it, it forms a ball of cells, and the next stage is called a gastrulation, which it's a funny word, but it really means that the embryo, the cells, have stratified into three layers, an outer layer, a middle layer, and an inner layer. These layers are called, right in sequence, the outer layer ectoderm, the middle layer mesoderm, and the inner layer endoderm. Derm means germ layer. So ecto means outer. So the outer layer of the embryo, there's three layers. The outer layer is called ectoderm. Each one of these germ layers is responsible for providing very specific organs or tissues of the body.
Right.
The ectoderm only provides for two things: the skin and the central nervous system. The central nervous system is formed from the back of the embryo. The skin of the back turns in and forms what is called a neural tube, and that becomes the spinal cord in the brain. And so what was the point is, well, the cell's skin is the brain. The human skin, the derivative of the skin from the back, actually becomes the brain itself. And it says the same thing, and this is a very important point, is that when I tell students this, when I was teaching in medical school, they see themselves, we each see ourselves, we look in the mirror as this singular entity, a single person. I look in the mirror, I see Bruce right there, and I say, well, that's one thing. And the reality is, that is a misinterpretation for this reason. If I would shrink you down to the size of a cell, you would see that you are actually made out of living units. The living things that make you are the cells. You are a community of cells. In fact, maybe up to 50 trillion cells in that community. What's the point? It's like, well, you look at yourself as a singular thing, but in truth, you're a harmonious, when you're healthy, community of 50 trillion cells interacting together with a just like a metropolis. I mean, they exchange food and money and energy.
So we're sort of a totality of brain.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.